This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
I wonder how hot it is in Salamanca, Spain right now.
Let me check.
Don't you have those figures ready?
It's 84 degrees and sunny and just absolutely beautiful.
And Chad P.
My broadcast partner right here comes in, looks at the playlist and says,
that song's not about baseball.
It really isn't.
Well, what is it about?
Class is in.
I'm so mad about John and Kate plus 8. I can't even tell you. They're getting a divorce.
Minus 2 now.
No, well, we're going to have to, you know, now split up the kids and, I don't know, sell them off and put them to work.
He put earrings in his ears.
Yeah, he did. It's very strange that we're actually watching that show.
And discussing it.
It is Rock School here for an unbelievably hot. It hasn't rained since 1974, if I'm not mistaken. My name is Joe Burns, a professor in the communication department. Sitting to my immediate right, the kid who's going to be in charge all day. What is your name?
Boss P.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, this day, I have nothing to do with. You see, I had already finished all of my shows for the summer and for the remainder of the year, a total of 23 shows. I was done, finished. I walk into Chad's office and I say, well, what do you want to do next week? And he says, I got this great idea for a show about nothing but summer songs. Why? Because it's so hot outside that, you know, when you put your pets out, they explode.
Exactly.
You know, like I found a tail. And he says, I'll give you the playlist and you do the show. And I said, no, I'm done. I don't want to do any more shows. You do it.
And I said, fine, you produce it then.
I don't know how to produce the show. So Chad decided to take the whole thing over. So for today's show, it's all about summer songs. Songs that deal with summer. So let me get my keys. I reach the keys.
Passing over the keys.
I got the keys to the show. Thank you so much to Chad.
Thank you so much.
Tell us all about the last day of school,
well,
Mr. Chad.
Exactly. When I was putting together this show, I was thinking of songs that I could put in for the summer, vacation songs and whatnot. And the very first song that comes to my mind when I'm thinking of summer is, well, School's Out during the summer. And you hear it every single time you listen to this show. It's Alice Cooper's School's Out.
Not me.
No, not you.
Oh, I loved high school. I wanted more homework and all that, and I got beat up a lot.
You're the exception.
No, not really.
1972, Alice Cooper releases an album called School's Out, and this is the track title from it. He got the idea when an interviewer asked him, what's the greatest 3 minutes of your life, Mr. Cooper? And he thought for a second, and he said, there's two times.
Yeah.
Christmas morning, when you wake up and you're heading over to the Christmas tree to get all of your presents. That's one. And the other one is the last 3 minutes of the last day of school, where you're just about to, like you say, explode.
Yeah.
And not due to the heat, from just the excitement.
That's it? Those two times?
Those two times.
Okay.
That's what he said.
All right.
Cooper thought that if he could catch those 3 minutes in a song, it would be huge.
And it was.
And huge it is. So for an hour today,
summer songs, man.
Summer songs.
That's right.
And School's Out.
Right here on Rock School. I've never understood what the line "school's out with fever" Why? I never understood what that meant. School's out with fever. I mean, did you get sick on the last day of school? That must have been terrible.
Could have got swine flu or something.
Yeah, that would have been bad.
Very possibly. This is Rock School, and we're talking about nothing but summer songs today. Summer is in full swing. A heat index of 115 degrees outside. What is going on?
Yeah, we're
going
to break records. That high pressure system is just sitting over top of the great state of Louisiana. But past that, all it's doing is cooking the Gulf.
That's right.
Cooking the Gulf.
That's
so
right.
When this
That's
thing
right.
finally breaks and, you know, tropical storm, I don't know, Fred, decides to make his way into the Gulf. He's got nothing but fuel.
You know what happens whenever all those hurricanes kick into high gear, Doc? You know what I get?
What's happening?
I get the summertime blues.
Oh, no. Eddie Cochran?
Eddie Cochran.
Oh, I'd like to help you, son, but you're too young to vote.
We're going
to
talk about that right here, right now. Eddie Cochran was born October 3rd, 1938, and died April 17th, 1960. The man was 21 years old. Died from a car crash in England.
Mm-hmm.
Summertime blues reached number 8 in 1958, and that line that you just said, I'd like to help you, son, but you're too young to vote. There was a big controversy at the time of the legal voting age because it was 21. A lot of people
wanted
to see
it. But you could go to war at 18.
Well, that line in that song was just one of the many protests, so to speak, for the eventual 26th Amendment that would get passed. The anniversary date was just a couple of days ago, Monday, June 22nd. So it was in 1970 that the legal age to voting would be turned to 18 from 21.
Right.
Yep. Eddie Cochran, Summertime Blues, right here on Rock School.
I'm a gonna raise a fuss, I'm a gonna raise a holler about a working all summer just to try to earn a dollar.
I'd like to see minimum wage raise, please. Well, I'd like to help you, son, but you're too young to vote.
That's true. Beach Boys, The Who, Blue Cheer, Olivia Newton-John, Alan Jackson. While you were getting ready for the next song, I sat down and sort of jotted down who I remember actually redid the song.
Ooh,
you know,
man,
Olivia Newton-John actually did this?
I read about that, too, yes.
Yeah, or
that song was covered all over the place.
As we actually used to call her, Olivia Neutron Bomb.
So,
now, summer songs, Heat. Did you bring, by any chance, one of my wife's favorites, Mungo Jerry?
I do have Mungo Jerry. Would you like to play that one? I'll get that one queued up in the summertime, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, Mungo Jerry. What do you know about him?
Well, that song is arguably the most successful and recognizable summer song. The lineup of Mungo Jerry was found. Well, Mungo Jerry in itself was founded by a man named Ray Dorsett. And that lineup.
He's a Brit.
Exactly. In that lineup's entirety, it included 22 different people.
Yeah.
When you actually research them, there's been 22 members of Mungo Jerry.
Yeah, he's the only guy that actually was the same throughout the entire run of the group, and he just had other people that came with him along again. Do you have any idea where the name of the group came from since you did the research?
I don't. No.
I actually know this one's from T.S. Eliot.
Really?
From the old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. The poem is Mungo Jerry and Rumple Teaser.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's where it comes from. So you have it?
I do.
You ready to go?
Ready to go.
In the summertime when the weather is... ready?
Yeah.
Hit it, man. Rock School. That's kind of like Build Me a Buttercup. There's nobody in the real world that could actually say they dislike that Mungo Jerry song.
That's a good song.
It is.
Very good song.
This is Rock School as we talk about the summer heat. I mean, you can sit around and complain about it, or you can just have fun. We're having trouble with the kids because you can't take them out.
You're right. You are right about that.
Yeah, we're going to find a place, and there's no mall around. You got to travel to Baton Rouge to go to a mall.
That's
so
right.
We're just looking for things to do. So we take them outside, and we turn the hose on them.
My son is staying with his grandmother, my mom, while I'm working, and my wife is also working. I pick him up in the evenings, and their next-door neighbor has an in-ground swimming pool. So I go yesterday to go get him yesterday, and they're swimming in the swimming pool, and I said, boy, how's the water? It looks good. She said, it feels like a lukewarm bath.
Yeah,
the pretty swimming
much
pool.
It.
So
Let's talk about baseball.
Why don't we? In celebration of what's going on right now at the CWS, and by the way, by the time this show makes air, we will have crowned a national baseball champion. Hopefully it is the Tigers of LSU.
But hopefully.
At the time of this taping, they are in the lead of the series. So I decided to bring in a little Chicago. And my
Saturday in the Park.
Saturday in the Park. My broadcast partner right here comes in, looks at the playlist, and says,
that song's not about baseball.
It really isn't.
Well, what is it about?
Well, because Robert Lamb went to a park in Chicago.
Well, I know that.
Listen to the lyrics. He's simply writing about a park in Chicago and all the things he saw while he was at a park in Chicago.
Right. He saw steel drum players and singers and dancers.
That's
and jugglers.
Right.
And
an old man singing Italian songs.
Yeah,
and in the song he says, exactly. You know, old man singing Italian songs, and then there's just gibberish after that. It's not Italian,
right.
By the way.
He said, we got to put music to this. They wrote the song. Now, I get the baseball line from the fact that they play the song at Wrigley Field and Yankee Stadium.
Only because it says park, and you refer to a baseball field as a park.
My show, I say it's about baseball.
Okay, fine. Here's a trivia question about Chicago. Okay. I know it's your show, but I just happen to know this about Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago is one of very few rock bands that had, at one point in time in the band, three lead singers.
Wow.
A lot of bands had two.
Okay.
You know, but this band, Fleetwood Mac, had three lead singers. The Beatles had four.
Right.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash had three.
Okay.
This is another band that had three lead singers. At one point in time, they had Terry Kath.
Yeah.
They had Peter Cetera.
Yeah.
And they had the guy that sang this one.
Right.
Can you do it?
Robert Lamb.
Aha. So Chicago, three lead singers in one band. There's very few that had them.
Here Where are you going Saturday?
I was in the park. Rock School.
Go ahead and keep up that little smart aleck attitude, yeah.
Let me let you into a little thing on radio. Chad does this a lot, even when he's not in charge of the show. The song's coming to an end. He always looks at me with about 12 seconds left, and he goes, ready? And I love to look at him and go, do I have a choice? Song's coming to an end. What if I say no? What's he going to do? Ask Chicago to keep singing? Can you guys go into a vamp, huh? Joe's not ready.
You so, suck.
I am so scared of this next song.
Oh, you'll be fine.
No, I'm stepping away. You are going to explain this next song, because I know he's going to explain the topic of the song.
Brian Adams.
The Summer of 69.
That's right.
And
I mean, what else is there to say?
It's
not about the year 1969.
It can't be. Brian Adams was born, because I tried to explain the song on the air one time. He was born in 1959.
Yep.
So it's not about him forming a rock band, because he would have been 10 years old.
We're gonna leave it at that. We're
going to
take a break.
Own.
We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I am going to explain what this song is about, although you probably need not an explanation. It's not about a year. Hello, KLSU with an awesome baseball team, 91.1 Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Thank you so much for running Rock School.
iTunes. Get us on iTunes. We love iTunes.
We'll be back. This is Rock School, and that was 60 seconds of what you did not hear of a plea from a desperate older man. Please don't talk about this. Please don't talk about this.
Okay, I told you not to do it.
I know you did. All right. Here's the deal. It's not about the year, folks. If you're over 18 years old, you can figure out what it's about. It's not about the year 1969.
Do my joke.
No, I'm not doing a joke. No, this show
is
about.
My joke is better.
This show is about education, and I'm educating this audience.
I'm telling
a third
you.
Of the audience right now is going, I had no idea it wasn't about the year. Here's the story.
Okay.
Brian Adams co-wrote this song with a man named Jim Vallance.
He also worked with Aerosmith a lot.
Yes. Jim Vallance said this. All right? This is an entire quote from Jim Vallance. I wish this little controversy would just go away. My influence for the song was Jackson Browne's Running on Empty, which includes references to 1965 and 1969. Brian even cited the film Summer of 42 as his influence.
Right.
When Brian and I were writing the song, it was originally called Best Days of My Life. The words Summer of 69 only appeared once, right after the played it till my fingers bled. Okay,
right.
That was it. The song really was about the summer of the year 1969.
Yeah.
It took us about a week or two to fine-tune the lyric, and at some point we realized that Summer of 69 was a better title, so we literally shoehorned that phrase into a few more places in the song.
Right.
At no time do I recall discussing innuendos with Brian Adams, except for one little thing. When we recorded the demo in my basement, toward the end of the song, Brian sang a little naughty bit, and I'm not going to go into detail about the little naughty bit. You can use your imagination.
Right.
We had a laugh about it at the time, and Brian decided to keep it when he did the final recording a month or two later. Nobody seemed to notice, and that was the end of it until a few years ago when he started introducing the song in concert by saying, "This song has nothing to do with the year 1969." The audience reaction was predictable. Let me qualify this by saying I don't pretend to speak for Brian Adams. Two of us wrote the song. Maybe he was thinking about something completely different, but I was thinking about that amazing summer when I turned 17 years old. Brian Adams is a great writer, a great singer, and a great friend. He's entitled to his recollections of what inspired the song. My recollections just happen to be a little different than his.
Okay.
There it is. Are we going to get off the air now? Are we
no,
going to get
probably
bumped
not.
Or anything?
Probably
right,
not.
Then. This is the summer of 69 right here on Rock School.
I got my first real six string, bought it at the Five and Dime, played it till my fingers bled. Was the summer of 69. Me and some guys from school had a band and we tried real hard.
Summer 69, as we discuss summer songs. It's 100 degrees outside. It's air conditioned in this room, and Doc is sweating.
No, he's not.
Oh, yes, you are.
That's not what I thought it was about.
That's what a lot of people did.
I thought it was the price of a McDonald's hamburger at the time. That's what I thought it was about.
Believe
I had
not,
no idea.
I really did. I cleared up this entire topic with the general manager of this radio station, and the first words out of his mouth was, "What? It's not about a year? What?"
Oh, really?
Oh, he didn't know.
Oh, I thought for sure everybody knew that it had the innuendo and all of that.
You'd be surprised at how many people. Hey, welcome to the bottom of the hour. We're fixing to do a little bit here called 7 Days and 70 Seconds. But first, Doc's going to tell you how you can get in touch with us in case you have a show topic idea or a question or a concern, or if you want to comment about, I can't believe you said what Summer 69 was really about. Go ahead, Doc.
Okay, you can get to the website by kslu.org, and there you'll find a place to write to us, and you can tell us all the things you like and all the things you don't like, and by all means, you can see old episodes. We have all of our old episodes up there. Just look for the link that says episodes, and there they'll all be, every single one of them, one right after the other. Boom. Now, we've done summer. I wonder if we can get a show out of fall and spring and winter.
That's going to be your topic, dude.
Oh, you think so? I'm going to take off from the rest of those?
That's right. That's
seven
right.
days in 70 seconds, something that happened on these dates, the 22nd of June all the way through June 26th, way back when in music
June
history.
June 28th.
Do I have the 28th?
No, I have the 28th.
Oh, you're doing the
end of it
then.
We're reversing the order.
That's right.
Yeah,
June 26th
to
the 28th.
Today, so
my
here
goodness,
we go.
I get the days all wrong. You have a music bed for me?
I do, and I believe you have June 22nd.
On Monday, June 22nd, 1922, history professor Jonathan Weiner wins a round in his 9-year legal battle with the FBI, seeking to open the agency's file on John Lennon.
On June 23rd, back in 2003, in the city of London, Eminem gave a $450,000 necklace to a fan in the front row of a concert. He had announced from the stage that he was going to give this to the sexiest woman he saw.
Wow, what was his name? Kidding. June 24th, way back when in 2000, Kiss auctions off memorabilia from their touring days. The items bring in $876,000.
Keeping up with the charity giving, on June 25th in 2004, Eric Clapton's guitar auction raised more than $7.5 million for the Crossroads, which is a Caribbean drug addiction center that Clapton founded and sponsored. Among the guitars that Clapton sold were the Blackie Stratocaster, a 1964 Cherry Red Gibson, and the 1939 Martin Acoustic that he played on his Unplugged album.
Right.
$7.5 million.
Can you believe that? And the next year, if I'm not mistaken, he did it again and sold Brownie, which was another Stratocaster, but obviously Brown.
Gotcha.
June 26th, a Friday, 1977, Elvis the Pelvis plays his final concert at Market Square Arena. Indianapolis, Indiana.
On Saturday, June 27th in 1989, The Who performed the rock opera Tommy in its entirety for the first time in 17 years at New York City Radio Music Hall, and the show raises money for a children's charity as well as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And finally, on June 28th in 1991, Paul McCartney's Liverpool how do you say that, Doc? I'm not even going to try that. How do you say that? What is that?
Oratorio.
Oratorio. There you go. Liverpool Oratorio debuts at the Anglican Cathedral in Liverpool.
There you are.
And that is 7 days in 70 seconds. Right back to the topic, I believe. It's about the summertime.
Summertime, Summertime by the Jamies.
Exactly. The Jamies are an American singing group in the 1950s, and they were led by Tom and Serena Jameson. Uh-huh. Summertime was the group's only hit. It reached number 26 on the U.S. Hot 100. The song was co-written by Jameson and Sherman Feller, who later became a public address announcer for the Boston Red Sox at Fenway Park.
Want something else a little neat about it?
Please do.
Summertime, Summertime is one of very few singles that were reissued, meaning they put it out and then it went away and they put it out again.
The
Twist was one song that did that. Went out and came back.
Gotcha.
This was reissued and charted twice.
Sweet.
Very few singles have done it. Summertime, Summertime, Rock School.
It's summertime, 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 summertime. We'll shut them books and throw away. Say goodbye to dull school days. Summertime, 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 summertime. It's summertime.
You know, it's a harpsichord in there.
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. What do we got next?
Well, getting ready to go on vacation in San Diego in a couple of weeks, and guess what I'm going to go buy for my wife?
An itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka-dot bikini?
That's right.
You know who Trudy Packer is?
Yes.
Who's Trudy Packer?
She's the lady that says, 2, 3, 4, tell
Let's
the
see
people.
If you've got some more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell the people what she wore.
Brian Hyland wrote this song. It was his first and biggest single, and he got it at the age of 16.
Yeah.
16 years old.
Yeah.
Went number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
Not
and
the
sold.
Youngest.
Huh?
Not the youngest.
Well, that's okay.
You know who the youngest guy is to have a top 100 hit?
No.
Stevie Wonder.
Oh.
Thank you.
And how old?
He was 12, if I'm not mistaken. It was a Fingertips, part two.
Okay.
Okay.
Hyland released it, but he didn't write it. It was written by a man named Paul Vance. Okay?
Yeah.
And Vance actually read about an imposter that claimed that he had written the song. His name was Paul Van Valkenburg.
Oh, Paul.
Okay, so when Paul Valkenburg had people come up to him and say, well, if you wrote that song, how come you're not filthy rich from all the royalties? He said, well, I sold the rights to a teenager. I sold the rights of the song to a teenager.
Yeah.
Paul Vance didn't know Paul Van Valkenburg existed until he was reading the obituaries in a newspaper, and this guy Valkenburg was given credit for writing the song. And Paul Vance went, what?
That's
Wait
not
a
right.
minute. And Paul Vance, you know, he's received numerous royalties for the song.
Sure.
But someone else out there was taking claim for his song. So
no, you can't do that.
No, you can't.
When they released it in Spanish, you know what it was called?
What?
Bikini Amarillo.
Oh.
I swear to gosh, that's true.
I believe you.
I've actually heard a copy of it.
Here it is, Brian Hyland on Rock School.
She was afraid to come out of the locker. She was as nervous as she could be. She was afraid to come out of the locker. She was afraid that somebody would see. Guess there isn't any more.
I used to love that song whenever I was little. It's actually on a Halloween album.
Yeah.
I got a Halloween vinyl from my mom when I was like 5 years old,
uh-huh.
and that song was on it.
Well, you have to round it out. You got to finish out the album. They probably needed two or three more songs, and they simply took it as a novelty tune.
Sure.
And they put it right next to Monster Mash.
Why not? Why not?
Why not play in the Boys of Summer? They're playing baseball. This is the second baseball reference that we have. LSU's out there playing baseball. And
That's
if
right.
I'm not mistaken, John Fogerty has an album that puts me out in
Center Field.
Oh, yeah.
See, now this song I definitely know is about baseball.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
He's talking about put me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
Oh, sure. Rounding
that
third,
good
it's
stuff.
A brown-eyed, handsome man.
It's right. Exactly.
Sure.
I love this song. I really do. And I love John Fogerty. Even whenever he was a member of CCR and some of his solo stuff.
Yeah.
He's got a great voice. And here's a little known fact. I didn't know this about him, but did you know that he is such a perfectionist that if he has material that he thinks is not live up to the standard that he sets,
yeah.
he wants it destroyed.
Why?
That's just how he is. When he first went solo in 72, he released some country western song covers and finally released an album called Hoodoo in 76. You familiar with Hoodoo?
Yeah, I know it, yeah.
Well, Hoodoo did poorly, and John Fogerty said, you know what, I wasn't really happy with that album anyway. Destroy the master tapes.
Really?
Yes, he is such a perfectionist. If it doesn't live up to his standards... get rid of it. He wants it destroyed.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Made his comeback in 1985 with the release of this album and this title, Put Me In, Coach. I'm ready to play.
No, I've never seen the guy live, but I have seen him twice on TV when he was playing. And each time he played that song, Center Field, he came out with a guitar that was built out of a baseball bat.
What?
Yeah, the neck was a baseball bat.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Did you ever play baseball for any kind of little league or anything?
Oh, yeah. I was a catcher.
Up? Really?
And the problem was I'm so tall, and even when I was younger, I was so tall. When I got down into the crouching position, even when I was in the crouching position,
you
I was almost
taller.
I was almost out of the strike zone anyway.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Guess what position I played?
What's that?
Center field.
Were you really?
Yeah, I got knocked out by a pop fly.
Fantastic.
Unconscious.
Oh, yeah.
My father came out on field. Son. just cover my face.
How did you know that if you were knocked out unconscious?
When I woke up, he was there.
Oh, I see. I had no idea. Got lost in the sun, I assume?
Yes.
Hot.
It was hot.
Speaking of hot, I ran to Wikipedia. So take it with a grain of salt.
Okay.
But I ran to Wikipedia. According to the wiki, in 1922, the hottest temperature ever in the world.
In the world.
El Azizia, Libya, 136 degrees.
What?
136 degrees.
You can't survive outside like that.
I would assume you'd explode. California's Death Valley had the highest temperature ever in the United States.
What was that?
134.
Oh, my word.
That was back in 1913. So much for global warming. The place on Earth, if you had to pick a place on Earth that has the highest average temperature year-round.
Yeah.
94 degrees. That's the average temperature year round.
Where?
That's Dakol, D-A-K-O-L. I'm assuming that's how you say it. Dakol,
okay.
Ethiopia.
Wow.
So that's it. So don't go to Death Valley and don't go to El Azizia, Libya. Those are the two places that will, burn you up. You'll die, fall over, and stew in your own juices.
Apparently
if you
so.
Go to those two places.
Ponder on those temperatures while we take a quick pause for the cause. Hello, KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana. Thank you for running Rock School. And also, Radio Universidad. I wonder how hot it is in Salamanca, Spain right now.
Let me check.
Don't you have those figures
it's
ready?
It's 84 degrees and sunny and just absolutely beautiful.
You heard it here first. We'll be right back. Rock School.
Yeah,
boom. Rock School right here. Dr. Joe Burns and Chad
right.
P. It's my show today.
Okay.
And we're talking about summer. We're talking about vacations. We're talking about heat. Do you have some more figures over there, meteorologist?
No, I just real quick, since I had the page up, decided to look the opposite direction. A Russian... what you call it, weather station in Antarctica, recorded the lowest temperature ever on Earth, -28.6.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't think your snow cone would melt. We can't take the kids out. It's
right.
That hot. We can't take the kids out because it's a summer in the city.
It is. Oh, look at you.
Oh, the professional disc jockey.
Mr. Lovin' Spoonful right there. Released in the summer of 1966. Here's a story. Mark Sebastian, that's his name. He submitted,
well, it's a brother of John Sebastian.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay. He submitted the lyrics as a poem for the literary magazine of Blair Academy.
They wouldn't take it.
Well, the poem was entitled Summer in the City, and it had the refrain, "But at night, it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be all right. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the night in the summer in the city."
Right.
So then John changed the slower verses to a more upbeat model, keeping the title and the refrain. Mark's part remains as he wrote it, words and music, and then Steve Boone, the bass player, added the instrumental coda in the middle. And there you go.
You got it.
The Lovin' Spoonful.
One more little piece of information.
Yes.
The horn, the car horn that you hear.
Uh-huh.
Want to be real specific?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a VW Bug.
Well, there you go.
Just one more little piece for you.
All right.
Summer in the City. Rock School.
city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But at night, it's different.
Summer in the City, Rock School, as yes, we do nothing but summer songs. Got time for one more?
We do. Yeah. I just want to go ahead and take this opportunity to thank you for letting me drive this pony.
Thank me?
Yeah.
What are you thanking me for? It's just something I didn't have to do any work for. I just had to show up and make jokes. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and go over some of the songs that we won't have time to get to. There's Summertime by Billy Stewart.
Yeah.
There's Hot Fun in the
That's
Summertime.
That's a Porgy and Bess tune.
Hmm?
Oh, that's a Gershwin tune. Summertime by Billy Stewart.
Yeah, you familiar with it?
Oh, yeah. That's a Gershwin tune. That's from Porgy and Bess. It's beautiful.
Okay. Hot Fun in the Summertime, Sly and the Family Stone.
Misunderstanding. Listen to Misunderstanding by Genesis.
That's right.
Yeah, that's...
I actually had that in my notes.
Did you?
Somewhere. Yes.
How about that?
Phil Collins cites that as a major influence. Summer by War.
Great.
Dancing in the Street, Martha and the Vandellas. I said we were going to get to play it. Doc said he didn't want to.
You know, Van Halen killed that song for me.
Really?
When they redid it on Diver Down, killed that song for me.
Oh, well.
So are we finishing with the Go-Go's?
We are. We're going to finish with...
I love the Go-Go's. I was a closet Go-Go's fan.
Why closet?
Well, because, you know, growing up when I did, you had to like, you know, Uriah Heep, UFO, Rush, and all that kind of stuff. So I'd get in my car, you know, roll down the windows, and I'd fire up Anthem, or I'd fire up Working Man, and I'd get out of earshot, roll up the windows, and my lips are sealed. I liked the Go-Go's. Nice. I really did. I kind of dug them.
You know, the Go-Go's made rock history by being the first all-female band to write their own songs and play their own instruments to top the Billboard album charts.
Is that true?
Supposedly that's true.
They're the first all-female group
to top the Billboard album charts
that wrote their own songs, because before them were the Shirelles and the Ronettes and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of, like, you know, they did this.
The girl groups. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if that's the caveat, they wrote their own songs, and that's probably what sets them apart.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
This was, where's my notes?
I just know this off the top of my head, Vacation. Vacation was the first single.
Oh, was it?
It was the first single that was put on a cassette. It was the first single. And they only know that because we gave them away at one of my radio stations. It was one of those things. I remember when Boy in the Bubble came out. It was the first mini CD, and we gave them away. And the Go-Go's Vacation was the first single because we gave them away.
This is what the general manager wanted on the show. He said, "You got to play Vacation by the Go-Go's."
Sure.
And then he turned around and said, "So Brian Adams saw..." We're not going to go back into that. Anyway, this song reached number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100 in the summer of 82, and that's going to do it. My name is Chad P.
I'm Joe Burns.
Hey, thanks for listening. Class is dismissed.